Lawrence Boswell has had a varied directing career, encompassing everything from work with the RSC to presenting Madonna and other celebrities in the West End, and before that, a landmark Spanish Golden Age season while he was artistic director of the Gape Theatre. Since 2011, he's been artistic director of the Ustinov Studio at the Theatre Royal Bath. There, he's staged many new and rediscovered plays, including UK premieres of works by Lope de Vega, Calderon, Dostoevsky, and the Parisian Florian Zeller, who's The Father, starring Kenneth Cranham and directed by James MacDonald, was one of the most talked about productions of 2014 and 2015. It transferred to the Tricycle in Kilburn, then to the West End, where it's about to reopen for a further limited run and then a tour. The Mother, written in 2010, 2 years before The Father, is now at the Tricycle with Gina McKee in the title role, directed by Lawrence Boswell himself, after a successful debut at the Ustinov Studio. Well, Lawrence Boswell has joined me, Heather Neal, to talk to Theatre Voice, mainly about The Mother, but I expect we'll cover other topics as well. Well, first of all, Lawrence, how did you encounter Florian Zeller? Because he's relatively new to playwriting, isn't he? He started as a novelist, and he was quite well known, although still very young as a novelist in France.
Yeah, he's kind of the French literary wunderkind. He wrote a novel in his mid-20s, which became the hit novel of the year in France and established him as a major literary figure. And he wrote another couple of novels after that and then turned his hand to playwriting. And we found him because I just sent emissaries off to various European capitals to talk to the literary agents there and come back with bags full of plays. And Florian was already established as a kind of hot figure in Paris because he'd had three very successful shows on in Paris. And so in a way, he was the obvious person that everyone pointed us towards in terms of the important new writers of. And as soon as I read the plays, I just thought, yeah, let's get the rights to as many of these as we can, and let's put them on, because they seem to me to be new and fresh, and the voice of a major writer. It feels something like, you know, getting a very early Harold Pinter play and thinking, my God, there's a massive talent here, you know, and he is. I think he's a huge talent.
I'm sure we'll come back to Pinter, but first of all, the translation. How did Christopher Hampton's done the translations?
Christopher Hampton is very au fait with French drama. I mean, he's a linguistic scholar. Christopher is
Liaison Dangereuse
and German. He translates regularly from German and from the French, and so he was aware of Florian's work and had already translated one of his plays by the time we became involved. And so Florian, of course, was delighted that we approached Christopher, and Christopher was delighted to translate Florian's work because he felt like us, that this was a major talent, and therefore he wanted to render Florian's works into English. And I think Florian's been very lucky in having Christopher, because Christopher is the ideal translator.
Yeah. Well, the subject of The Father is Alzheimer's, of The Mother, a woman's mental instability exacerbated by the departure of her son, now an adult, from home. They have a similar style with scenes repeated but with a different edge and from a different perspective. Sometimes you feel from really within the mind of the upset person, which makes the audience constantly question the truth and of what they're seeing. So I'm just wondering what it's like to rehearse this kind of thing. But for a start, how on earth do they learn these scenes being slightly different within minutes of each other?
Well, you've spotted a very important and significant thing in terms of the practicality of putting the plays on. They are very difficult to learn because they're not only full of very, very particular punctuation, they're full of very particular, like Pinter, at very particular moments of pausing, so that in themselves the scenes are difficult to learn because there's lots of ums and ahs and all these things become, you see, you understand, are essential to the rhythm. So the text itself is difficult to learn, and then you have to learn a scene that is very, very similar but significantly different. And so we coined a phrase in rehearsal, which is, we've been zealoured. And that's when you literally be in scene A and you start to do scene B, and then nobody knows where they are, and you have to start again.
Goodness. Does it ever happen in performance?
One would hope not.
Well, for the actors, do they have to make a decision, or would that be counterproductive as to when they are telling the truth, or if they know they're telling the truth?
Again, you've hit on an absolutely key action. I think it's best, we all were searching to understand the mind of Florian Zeller and the aesthetics of Florian Zeller. And for about a week, it took us about a week before all our minds became zealoured and we understood what he was interested in and what he as an artist, what his gift is, what is the light that he sheds. And I'll just give you a simple example. Just before rehearsal started, I sent Florian a list of questions and assumptions about the mysteriousness of the text, saying, look, I think this is true in the play. I think this is true in the play. And I think this is true in the play. Can you reassure me that I'm on the right lines? And Christopher said, Florian said, all your arguments, Florence, are completely convincing. And so is the opposite.
Oh.
And I thought this is a cocky French playwright being deliberately obtuse. But it wasn't. And then he continued. So I said, look, is the dad having an affair? And he said, yes, he is, brackets or not. And that actually, in doing that, it was actually teaching me what he was after, which is ambiguity. He's interested in the extraordinary ambiguity of actual consciousness.
Yes.
We're all used to the reassuring continuity of a reliable dramatist who tells his story nice and logically and says A is A and then B is B and C is C and then you can all relax. His interest in these two plays is to explore in the father the mind of a man suffering with dementia and in the mother a mother whose mind is unstable. And he doesn't want to isolate that person and kind of judge them and say, oh, that's the person with dementia, these are the normal people, and I'm writing from the normal person's point of view, and I'm looking at that poor person over there who's got dementia. Because that inherently, I think, is a violent and scapegoating perspective. It's a false perspective, and it's a false perspective that realism would give you.
Mm.
And if you watch, for instance, as I was rehearsing The Mother, I went to see the film that Julianne Moore is in which she plays a dementia sufferer, and she is absolutely
still
brilliant.
Still Alice,
and she deserves her Oscar. She's an absolutely superb performance. But the narrative, the aesthetics of that narrative, I would question. In the same way that The Extraordinary, it's maybe slightly heavy comparison, but the brilliant documentary called The Shower, in which that extraordinary French documentary maker debated with himself endlessly, how on earth do you find the aesthetics for presenting the Holocaust without it becoming pornographic, without you adding to the exploitation of that situation?
Mm.
And he created an aesthetic that answered that anxiety. And in a way, I think what Florian does is he, in both plays, he says, he works from the point of view of we. We all, as human beings, forget things. We experience discombobulation. We live in and out of time. We live in a complex universe. Our perceptions, our consciousness, actually, if you actually look at our consciousness, it's a complex and multivariate and multi-leveled experience. And so slowly as the play goes on, the farther you discover that the central character does suffer from from an illness in which his perceptions are regularly distorted, more consistently distorted than many of us. But the play never scapegoats. It never puts a label. It works from the point of view of the sufferer. It identifies with the victim, and therefore, to me, it's a real breakthrough, not only in theatrical aesthetics, but in our perception of mental suffering and mental health issues. And again, the same applies to the mother.
I think, has he himself said that he's interested in the difference between reality and the way it is experienced?
Yes. I mean, I suppose, in a way, I mean, it's terribly French, this terribly philosophical and intellectual, and that's part of the gift he brings us. But I would say he even questions the notion of reality.
Right.
You know, in the sense that there is a consistent thing that is separate to our perception.
Yeah. Well, you said terribly French, but he has said that he is in awe of Pinter. And he has, I think, said that he thinks that the productions he's seen here have in some ways got something out of his work that he hasn't seen in France because perhaps of our being more used to Pinter and Beckett and so on. Well, Beckett in France, but
he lived in Paris.
Yes, he did.
He wrote
exactly.
In French.
Exactly, that's what I... That's why
he is a French, he's a French say, writer in many ways, Beckett.
Beckett is, yes. But this thing about the sort of black comedy element, which he thinks is better found here. Is that something that he talked to you about?
Florian is the least demanding and the least invasive writer I've ever worked with. He very genuinely hands the play over to you, and he wants you to make of it what you will. He wants you to express yourself. He doesn't want to say, I'm sorry, Lawrence, this is how you're supposed to do it. He has none of that advice. He has no interest in controlling. He's a very generous and kind collaborator, and whenever he comes along to see the show, he makes very intelligent and sensitive observations. But he does have the advantage now, because his fame and his knowledge of his skill is spreading. The father is soon to open in New York, so then he'll experience the American theatre. But the American actors will bring something different to it again,
and some language changes for that.
yes, because it's not in English. it's in American. But I think if you want to look at the antecedents of Florian, I think it's very interesting. I would compare it to Marivaux, for instance, because Marivaux is very interested in the kind of the nuance of things, the minutiae of perception and relationship, the crackle from moment to moment of the possibility of meaning and the multiple possibility of meaning. And Florian said he was very flattered by that, but he never thaught of it, and he'd never particularly read any Marivaux. But that doesn't dismiss the argument. Writers don't necessarily know what they're writing. You know, great plays come through them. It's like light. It's like a light that shines through them.
He said he didn't realise he was writing about dementia until after he'd written The Father.
No, well, Harold Pinter said the same thing. He said, they just came to him, kind of fully formed, usually as pictures, and he just had to write them down very quickly. Mm. And that's the mystery of creativity. It's not, lots of people think, it's about working terribly hard and reading lots of books and being very clever, and actually, creativity is a gift that gets kind of posted through people and from where we don't know.
So did he not come? Does he not come to rehearsals at all?
Florian has never been to a rehearsal of any of his productions in this country. He's been to all the previews, and he's always expressed good notes and been part of the evolution of the show. But it's partly because he's so prolific. He's got another two plays in Paris that are on now, hugely successful. I'm going over in a couple of weeks to see one. And he's not only a writer, he's also a producer. He puts money into his own shows, he sets them up, he does the deals. He's quite a unique figure, in thinking of English writers. I mean, Shakespeare was a producer.
Yes.
But I don't think, David Hare and Tom Stoppard don't get their hands dirty with that kind of work. But
But there's another play about to be seen in England. Is that one that got away from you, or that's
No. That's
which is going to be at the Menu.
Well, it's a Bath Theatre Royal production.
Oh, right.
We're just using the Menu as a kind of venue, and they are a kind of partner. But the truth was in the same package of plays that we brought back from Paris. We've got another one.
And this one's a comedy, isn't it?
This one, and it will be very interesting because the mother and the father, as many people have observed quite rightly, share many similarities in that they are black comedies, but they are looking at issues which are extremely painful and extremely serious. You know, what happens to the depressed mind, what happens to the mind ravaged by dementia. These are very serious issues. Treated with his sly wit and his constant inventive ambiguity, but the truth, which is opening very soon, is an earlier play again, and is extraordinarily funny and is written consciously and deliberately as a comedy. So it's a much, it's kind of lighter. The subject matter is lighter. That's no criticism. It's just a fact. And it'll be very interesting to see how people's... I think it's got all of his... you know, you'll recognise Florian in it, but it's kind of... Adultery is in there as a kind of habitual... Well, it's a habitual human activity, obviously, but it's a habitual place for French dramatists to settle.
As in farce,
yeah. Which is... Florian is a great lover of Feydeau.
Ah, right. Well, he writes very demanding but very rewarding roles for actors, doesn't he?
That again, you put your finger on something very interesting, because I said to Florian, where do you start? Do you? Because they both seem so very personal. They seem so very deeply rooted in his lived experience, and I suppose somewhere they must be. But he doesn't consciously start there. What he said to me is he sees an actor and he wants to write a great part for them. And so The Father was written specifically for the French actor who's still playing the part now in his 80s. And The Mother, likewise, was written for a great French actress. And he was interested in their skill. He was a lover of their talent, and he thought, how can I write a part commensurate with their talent? I think that's one of his conscious ways into the process.
And have you seen these French productions?
I have indeed.
And how different are they from? I mean, obviously the language is the language is going to make a big difference to how they're perceived, isn't it? I mean, what an actor does with English is going to be different from actor does.
Yes, both The Father and The Mother were directed in France by different directors, and both the directors took the productions in very different directions to the directors in England. James McDonald and myself, and I know that Florian felt that, certainly with The Mother, that he'd seen his play properly done for the first time. The production in Paris is, I don't think, really comes to terms with the play. That's my opinion. The production in Paris of The Father is excellent, just very different to James's. You know, In the sense that the possibility of interpretation is wide with these plays, so in terms of actors' performances, so and the audience's perception, so also for the director, there's many ways to present Florian's work.
Mm. But it's not that in the French productions the ambiguity isn't there to the extent that it is in England, is it?
It is, and I think it. Certainly, in the Father, which is much more successful, as I say, ambiguity is a very native, very native soil for the French actors. It's the home of Marivaux, for instance. What what we're very lucky in here is we have such a, you know, extraordinary cohort of talented actors, and the technical and emotional skills and the obsessive English interest in irony is very, very useful for Florian's work. And obviously, irony is not quite the same as ambiguity, but I think the British actors and the spirit of London is kind of cynical and ironic and ambiguous, and so I think Florian enjoyed that. Enjoyed our dry sense of humour, and that we released the comedy of the plays.
Well, certainly in The Mother, playfulness is very close to absolute tragedy a lot of the time.
Indeed, it's part of Florian's. He seems to just understand the kind of his plays seem to understand the kind of A to Z of things, and the dial moves very easily from the A to the Z, showing you both sides of playfulness. Playfulness could be wonderful and delicious, and at times it can be psychotic and cruel and destructive. And that continuity, that the fact that they are all part of the same globe, is something that Florian's work excels at.
There are other characters in these plays, and in The Mother you have her husband, her son, who does reappear, and his girlfriend.
Or not,
yes. He reappears in the play.
Or not. Well,
but I mean, we see him.
Yes, no, you do. Yeah, sorry. Yes, we can. We can establish that there are lines, and there must be an actor, and he must say them. But whether he's a real person or not, that's another question.
Yes.
And there's a stage direction at the end of The Mother, which says the mother's in her bed. She finishes her last speech, and the stage direction is, as the mother finishes her speech, her son appears. Brackets or not. Which we've tried to do now, and I did get to the point where I said to the composer, when I was fully zealot up, I said, okay, John, I need a thank you there, and I don't. And he looked at me very confused. And so
this is John
Nichols, the composer who's done the sound and the music for the show. So what that translates into, if you're going to be literal about it, and it's always good not to be literal when you're discussing Florian's work, it's good to be ambiguous and keep the ambiguity going, because he hates the banality of the literal. But John has pitched many of the sound effects at a level where you're not sure that you're hearing them. Is that background noise? Is that the tube? Is that a sound effect? And that's a sound effect that is a sound effect and isn't a sound effect. And that's, we discovered those kind of subtleties and delicacies. Like, you know, the lighting designer had the same experience, because he started to kind of light the dramatic scenes in a dramatic way. And I said, no, Colin, that's not Zeller. That's too obvious. I want you to make it dramatic, but not in an obvious way. And he looked confused, and then he came back and he offered me 15 different shades of white. And you go, yes, that's it. So it's white, but it's a different white.
So, the lighting designer...
Colin Grenfell.
Right. Well, the designer of the set...
Mark Bailey,
yes. And that is an almost clinically white set, with some touches of colour in it, but things sort of disappear before the end. The set is very much part of the director's thinking, I should imagine.
Sure,
you must work
very
closely with the designer in these cases.
Yes.
So it makes a particular world, which may be partly in her head or not.
Well, the good or not. The design, at one level, most of the play happens in the front room of Anne and Peter, this kind of middle-aged couple. But you couldn't possibly put it in any kind of realistic room, because it also doesn't. And so the possibility that it be a real room, and the possibility that it be a fantasy or a dream or imagination or it have the openness. That's what we were looking for. How can we create a space that is open and a space that is paradoxical and a space that is ambiguous, like Florin's writing? So the space, people have said it's like a cell. People have said it's like a high fashion home. People have said it's
but it's all these things. It's also a bit like a hospital room.
Like a hospital room. It's like a padded cell. It's you know, it's whatever you want it to be at any one moment, and that's what I'm very pleased with. I think it's very successful. And it's also, somebody said beautifully, a group of psychoanalysts came, one of whom I knew, as a kind of outing. You can imagine them loving Florian Zeller. And I said to her, how did you find it? She said, I just love the design because it's inside and it's outside. And that's a very nice place and a nice way of saying what we were trying to achieve there. We're just trying to achieve something that's, in a way, it's similar to a Shakespearean aesthetic. You know, Shakespeare wanted a neutral stage so that he could, with the flicker of a metaphor, he could take you into the human psyche. He could take you to a great city in Rome. He could take you to a battlefield. He could, through the act of imagination and through the language, that's why the globe looks like it does. It's a platform. It's a neutral platform which can be transformed with language.
Yeah. And Zeller says he fell in love with theatre because he enjoys the sharing experience, but also its transience, the fact that that any one minute is gone when it's finished and that's it. When the evening's ended has gone.
Well, in that sense I agree with him, and in that sense that is the essential quality of theatre. You know, the sculptor works with marble, they work with lots of things, but they can work with marble, or you know, a painter maybe works with canvas and paint. We really work with something that's almost a mystery to define, which is the moment, because that's where we live, that's where we do our painting, that's where we do our sculpting. A play exists in the moment that it's spoken, in the moment that something is shared between two actors and audience. But the moment is here and it's gone, it's here and it's gone, it's a paradox. And so I think I share Florian's...
Which makes his work very particularly theatrical, in fact, because that's exactly what it is like.
Exactly. That's why I think he's a true man of the theatre. Sometimes you watch a play and you go, oh, is that more filmic? Is that more radio? Is that more, you know, is that more of a poem? Is that, you know, Florian is he thinks theatrically. He sees the possibilities that theatre can transform and twist and turn in ways that are infinite, rather than being stuck in the literal world of his front room.
So what do you think about screening plays or streaming?
Well, I think in a way it's a very good thing, because it's connecting a lot of people to the theatre who may, you know, go and watch the screening of a good show from the National, and then think, oh, it's not too weird, it's not too boring. I thought they're all boring old fogies, these theatre people, you know, lovies, as we know.
And it's cheap, of course.
And it's cheap, and it's all over the country, it's all over the world. It means theatres can generate more income. And I think it can only be good in that it becomes a way of maybe making theatre a choice that people maybe are not aware of how good and how alive and how dynamic some theatre is.
It undermines the transience idea, doesn't it?
No, it does. It does. For us purists and theatre, for whom theatre's been our life, I did a Day in the Death of Joe Egg, which was filmed for the launch of BBC Three with Eddie Izzard, and I died as I watched it, because they're not made for film.
Yeah.
They're not films. They're stage plays that live in the moment, which are then captured on film. So there is something inherently awkward about the transposition, but
and it's
still
that you're
something also does get transferred. Something does happen.
Yes.
But it's not as good as the real thing.
No, and it's important that you are in an audience with other people sharing that moment as well.
No, that's exactly the community of theatre, the shared experience.
It's odd when you watch a play on film and people don't know whether to clap at the end or not.
No.
There's nobody there.
No.
Or at least if they are, they can't hear you. Now, what about you? What's happening to you? I believe you're going to be at the Ustinov until 2017, but what happens then? Or do you not know yet?
I don't know. I'm sure. I imagine they'll offer me another contract, and I will probably accept. I'm very happy at the Ustinov. I've found a home where I can pursue the things that I'm passionate about. For instance, next spring we're looking at a season of new plays by the writers who I think are the most important writers. There's not one important writer in a whole country, but some of a leading writer from Madrid, a leading writer from Vienna, and a leading writer from Paris. And hot plays, hot off the press, writers who are challenging form, challenging the aesthetics of what a play is, from different parts of the world, and through the little, acorn of the Ustinov, they're coming into the mainstream of British theatre, and
it's very exciting.
It is very exciting, and I think in a way, I love what David Land's doing, for instance, at the Young Vic, and bringing all these really interesting directors in with their different aesthetics and their different way of staging things, and that's you can see that their influence spreading and reinventing and challenging English directors' practice. And I think, I do the plays because they're good and because they stimulate me. But I think one of the side effects of that is that they will affect British writers. British writers will go, I see. Yes, interesting. Interesting choice there, Mr. Zeller. Interesting choice, Mr. Alfredo Sanzol. Interesting choice, Daniel Kelman. And quite rightly, artists always borrow from each other and we all stand upon the shoulders of giants. So I think it's very good for the ecology of British theatre to keep bringing in new authors and new ways of looking at theatre.
Yes, you've always been interested in international work, haven't you? But that always brings up the question of translation.
Yes.
Of course. So you must also be very interested in that in itself.
Yes, it's a vexed area. I think I've just commissioned a translation of Forever Yours, Mary Lou by Michel Tremblay, and we've reset the play. It's originally written and set in Quebec, and we replaced it into an Irish context. And that's been translated by a guy called Michael West, who is, like Christopher Hampton, for me, the paradigm of the perfect translator in that Michael West and Christopher are both playwrights in their own right. So they both deal with the business on a daily basis of how do you create living language to tell stories to an audience in this culture now, which is a hugely important part of being a translator. You don't want a literal translation which sounds stilted and strange because it reflects the very different grammatical sentence structure and the different quality of another language. So you need someone who has the flair and the creativity of a practicing playwright. You also need, and both Michael and Christopher have it, people who have a very good knowledge of the original language from which they're translating. And also, and this I think is the absolute clincher and key, you need an extraordinary modesty, because as a translator you are serving somebody else. You need to reinvent it, you need to give it a voice, so you need to... Your creativity, your voice as a writer is important, but that voice must go through and embody the voice of the person you're translating. And both Christopher and Michael have those skills of humility, of scholarly knowledge of the language that they're translating from, and actually have a gift for playwriting. And that's quite a rare combination. And I despair really of working with learned academics who think they know how to improve Lope de Vega or Lorca or whoever, because of course their knowledge of the original language is marvellous, but their creativity is maybe not. Mm. So stilted rewrites of great Spanish plays is something I can live without.
So, Ustinov Productions taking over the world, because
you've
got a tour going on.
Yes.
Tours, but you've also got possibly 3 plays in the West End. Might that happen?
Yeah, no, that's a... Because I spent, as you well know, I spent about 15 years working in the West End, kind of on traditional West End terms. In other words, kind of finding projects and finding famous people to be in them. Because that's part of the commercial reality of the West End. And I think you find, certainly I found, that the creative challenges of putting plays on when sometimes you're papering over the cracks of things, you're dealing with the difficulties and the deficiencies of extremely famous people.
I've been avoiding the question of Madonna, but maybe...
I don't know why. How dare you suggest that I was referring to Madonna there? If you want to think that, that's your own wicked mind. But, no, so what my hope was with the Ustinov is that I could discover the great plays of the past that maybe we've forgotten about a bit, or great plays from 50 years ago that have never been performed over here, or maybe been performed once or twice. And in a way, most importantly, to find the contemporary writers whose work has yet to find a platform in this country, so that Ustinov will be at the research and development end of the British theatre ecology, and what that does is turn into Bad Jews. It's just opened the Haymarket. The Father's just about to reopen in the West End at the Duke of York's, and the Mother, we are negotiating the West End transfer of the Mother. So we will have 3 new plays by important contemporary writers which are in the West End on their own merits, with not one single pop star in any of them. They're there because they're good plays, they've got good reviews, and they've been acted by good actors. And that, to me, that's a mountain climbed and a victory won.
Yeah. Thank you, Lawrence. I think that's a very good place to stop. Thank you very much indeed.
Brilliant.